This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
On a Friday of Money Moves, as we welcome you back to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. He's JVT. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will have VP of Operations of this fine property, Mike Palm, join us. End of the hour, best bets, lots to get to in the NBA and NHL postseasons. But we're going to kick things off here with some NFL news. Of course, that came out yesterday. Aaron Rodgers agreeing to terms to a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. This has been months of, let's use the word uncertainty, even though the odds certainly indicated that Aaron Rodgers was going to be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But when you saw this come down yesterday, what was your first thought?
I mean, I just flipped to the next thing.
On to the next.
We talked about that. You hit this when we did our market power ratings. We discussed this. We talked about the Steelers. The Steelers were one of the teams that was being priced as being a squad that had Aaron Rodgers on it. This was not a conversation point, because every single person who followed the league and or the betting market knew that the Steelers were being priced as a team that had Aaron Rodgers on its roster. It finally came to fruition. They needed each other. Okay, cool. It finally happened. Now let's move on.
So before we move on.
Sure. Oh, I got something too. Go ahead.
I would like to get your opinion on his fit in the Steelers organization. Like, what do you think this looks like? I'm not going to say, do you think it moves the needle? Because obviously when your quarterback room currently consists of Mason Rudolph, Skylar Thompson, and Will Howard, like, he is somebody that I think for a one-year deal is going to make the offense go much better. But do you like him as a fit for this one year? What do you think?
I mean, I like him as the fit because they desperately needed him. They desperately need him, right?
So if they didn't have him, they would have been hosed.
Yes.
And so what happens with Kirk Cousins? Does he just stay in Atlanta now?
Probably, or somebody gets injured, right, during camp, and then you try to go and get, like, for example, I mean, I don't think this would happen, but, like, did the Colts think that Anthony Richardson's just screwed and they try to go and get Kirk Cousins? Again, I don't think that happens, but I think it's a situation like that where somebody gets hurt and then maybe you go and get him. But look, as far as all of this is concerned, I mean, he is a quarterback that they needed. I think it's generally, it works because they need him. But again, I will go back to, I think this team defensively up front is good. I don't think we talked enough about last year how average to below average they were on the back end. You know, you added some pieces there, but I still think you're going to be in that average range. I think that Aaron Rodgers, to use that term one more time, was average last year, which is interesting because the season was so bad. The thought that Aaron Rodgers was terrible was actually a little too far. Mm-hmm. He actually wasn't that bad last year, but he wasn't great. He was just an average quarterback. I think PFF had him 16th in the NFL. So like when he joins the Steelers, yeah, it'll probably be like average Aaron Rodgers. But what does that get you with the schedule that they have and an AFC that is as loaded as it is and an AFC North that has the two powers that are at the top in Cincinnati and Baltimore? I just still think that there's everything in the cards for this team to go below their win total, miss out on the playoffs, and just be, you know, whatever, 7-ish win team, as we kind of expect them to be every year.
Haven't won the division in 5 years. They're a team that consistently makes the playoffs, doesn't do anything with it. I feel like the win total is probably appropriate. They do have a brutal back end of the schedule again, like they did last year. You mentioned the division, how tough it is. They are the third shot in the division, but only because the Browns are potentially...
I was just going to say, and let's not forget this, because we do this a lot. The Browns are actually a very talented defensive team. They really are. They're just the most important position is just a complete and utter nightmare here. And so even those Browns game is my whole point.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to be this walkover for a team like the Steelers. There's going to be tough divisional games that they could lose one of them. I don't think it would be shocking if they lost both of them, especially if, God forbid, what if the upside hits with one of these young quarterbacks and they're actually like, okay. Right. So I just wanted to point that out too, where like I wouldn't just chalk up two division wins against Cleveland either. They're a talented defensive team.
The thing that you said about Cleveland, though, is kind of the same argument I would say for Pittsburgh, is that they're a very talented defensive team. What's derailed them historically since the back end of Big Ben's career is the quarterback position. And one thing that I will say that I really like about the Aaron Rodgers fit here specifically is that he doesn't turn the football over much, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Steelers last couple years are 35-13 when they have one or fewer turnovers. They're 3-16-1 when they turn it over twice or more. And that's kind of the recipe of success. Sure, for a lot of teams with the football, but specifically the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's been a big thing. And Aaron Rodgers, even this past year, in what was an ugly season overall in New York, the back end of the year, 18 touchdowns to just 4 picks the last 10 games of the season. And that's kind of what he's been known for, is a guy that throws a beautiful football and doesn't put it in danger as much. The interception numbers year after year are typically very, very low. And so I think that's something for guys that have turned the ball over and have caused them problems and have had to rely on defense, that maybe he could bring a bit of big upside for Pittsburgh there.
So and then I will ask you.
But hold on real quickly before you do. I am still very aware that he's going to be going into his age 41 season.
Sure.
That he did have a very significant injury in recent history. And even before that injury, he was playing some of the worst football of his career. So I don't know how much of the bad year last year was due to injury or just due to age and regression.
Okay. So what do you do here? If you're Stormy Bonatoni, we now have Aaron Rodgers officially in black and gold. Under win total, over win total. You think they're a playoff team?
I think sometimes the best bet's no bet.
Yeah.
I have no interest in anything on the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, because even when you think that they're supposed to have a down year, and they have, we all know the stat about Mike Tomlin and losing seasons and all of that. In the last 3 years, everyone has said, this is the year that they don't have them. And then what do they go ahead and do? So I just would rather stay off of this team. I don't really have any interest. I could make very easily arguments for them to go under, or for Aaron Rodgers to actually be a good enough missing piece to where he does enough and the defense can carry this team. They win games in the division. They shouldn't win all the time.
Yeah.
So
I think I'm calling the shot.
This is the year they go under?
Yeah, this is going to be the losing year.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. The reality of the situation, too, Rodgers, 13-21 his last 34 games, averaging 20 points per game.
Yeah, that's a proclamation. You can put it down. We're going to start to cover our proclamations. This will be a losing year for Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay. Did you see, social media is great. Did you see the footage of Aaron Rodgers' first meeting with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I haven't.
It was actually just a video from Grandma's boy, Mr. Cheezle. Remember when Mr. Cheezle is having the meeting and Grandma's boy, and he's telling him about how he had a dream that he was a bird, and then he went into the ocean and turned into a dolphin and was swimming with the fish?
Grandma's boy is such an underrated
It's such a great movie. And so, yeah, Aaron Rodgers and Mr. Cheezle.
So good.
What do you think when he walks in and he asks Tomlin to listen to the Joe Rogan pod that he just did a week ago?
One thing, final thought, because we have to move on here. But
you seem fired up about this.
I kind of think it could work, especially because we all know Aaron Rodgers is a very mercurial individual, and think what you want about him off the field. Does he cause more problems than he solves in that at times? But I also think about what Mike Tomlin did for Russell Wilson and kind of rehabilitating his narrative and his perspective, and that Russell Wilson did buy in. Could that be a similar situation for Aaron Rodgers too, where he has less of the off the field issues? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But okay, last 5 minutes here. I want to get back to the NBA Finals. We talked about game one last night and the chaos that ensued at the end of the game. But you have done an updated MVP ladder of kind of where you see those odds shaking out based on game one performances. You're going to do this after every game. So take us through it.
So I wrestled with this quite a bit. So let's roll through just the names really quickly, and then I'll tell you what I was having issue with. So the Finals MVP ladder, the man who hit the mythical shot, the one that always is perfect when the game is on the line, Tyrese Haliburton, hits the game winner after a quiet performance. I have him number one because he literally won the game for them with 0.3 seconds left to go. So he is number one in the Finals MVP ladder. Number two, Pascal Siakam, had a brilliant performance, 19-10 quietly, was very good, a big reason why. Had some great defensive moments, including a key block of my number three on the ladder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Gilgeous-Alexander finishes with, 38 points. Inefficient night for the most part, but still, when you score nearly 40 points in a finals game, and if they come back to win this thing, you're probably going to be up there in terms of finals MVP.
Really could have used those last two.
Yes, you could have used a lot. You could have used, by the way, he kicks it out to Jalen Williams. Yeah. So you could have used another assist if Williams actually hits the shot. He doesn't. Andrew Nembhard at number four and Miles Turner at number five. So I'll tell you what I was wrestling with. There's two things. First off, I think when we teased this at the top of the show, I said, I think there's the guy that is the leader, but I think there's also a right choice. Mm. I actually think Pascal Siakam is the right choice to be the number one for MVP. Siakam had a brilliant game. He was a big reason why the Thunder had a big trouble on the glass. Remember, they got completely out-rebounded in this game. And a big reason why was Pascal Siakam, who had 10 boards, some key offensive rebounds as well. At one point, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not paying attention and lets Siakam just blow by him for a key offensive rebound and put back. I think when you look at the magnitude of the shot versus the overall performance in the game, I think you make the very strong argument that Siakam was actually more valuable to the contest than Tyrese Haliburton as a whole. I just think the voters will probably give it to Haliburton. But then again, Tyrese Haliburton had a game-winning shot in the series against New York, and he didn't get it. So that's what the other thing I wrestled with. The other thing I wrestled with, and this is going to be really a non-starter because it's not going to happen, I actually think I should have put Andrew Nembhard ahead of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Nembhard was brilliant in that game yesterday. He was playing on-ball defense on Shai throughout the entire game, was doing a very good job. At one point, it's one of the better clips that we're not talking about. I think it's 108-103, and Andrew Nembhard gets the ball at the top of the key on offense, and he just goes, "Now, you know what? I'm going to cook Shai Gilgeous-Alexander here." And then he hits him with like a cross, like just a bevy of moves and then a step back three and just drills it in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's face to put them within, I think it was two. Nembhard was brilliant.
He only hit the two threes, but they were both like monster moments. Yes.
And so I think you could put Nembhard ahead of Shai. And again, I thought Shai had some really poor performances, some moments on defense. I mentioned just getting burned on the offensive rebound for Pascal Siakam. There was a point where Tyrese Haliburton just kind of blows by him as well. I get it. It's a large thing. It's a, you know, you have a lot on your plate. And so it's hard to play a very high level of defense for an entire game. But Shai's game was quietly subpar for a dude that scored nearly 40 in a finals contest. But again, I mean, I don't think it means anything because I don't think Nembhard's going to win finals MVP, even if they win this series. But I think there is, after all said and done, if you think Indiana's going to win this series, I think Siakam has a little bit of value on him at 13-1 if you think they're going to pull this off.
So that's the play. If you think that the Pacers can come back, and I mean, obviously everyone on social media has told us that they're winning this thing.
They knew
now
the whole
after
time.
Game one, so.
But as somebody who believes the Pacers are frauds, I don't think that's going to happen. So, I mean, I wouldn't waste my money on these losers at all.
And you're the worst. And I know you say that tongue in cheek.
No, but I mean it. I totally mean it.
You're the worst. You're the worst. And this is why people come for you, because you say things sarcastically and you can't tell
stupid.
It through the microphone. We're going to take a timeout when we come back. Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, he's going to join us. We will dive deeper into the NBA Finals, get his thoughts on the NHL as well. So much more to come here this hour on Money Moves.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season will be here before you know it. And get this, when you become a VSIN Pro subscriber today, get a full year of VSIN Pro access for $199, plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by our guy Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making more informed NFL bets. Sign up now. Get instant access to our daily email with the best bets from all of our show hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, where we're broadcasting from here in Las Vegas, 24/7 video access on the VSIN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide as well that drops in less than a month, July 1st. That's coming out. Don't miss out. This is a limited time offer. Head over to VSIN.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back here on Money Moves, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you and live in studio here for the next half hour. We've got Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, joining us on the desk. And speaking of the NFL, last segment, we were talking a little bit about the Aaron Rodgers official signing now here with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Did that move the needle for you? Because we were talking about the odds market. It didn't move the odds market, but that's because everybody has known he's going to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right. It was baked in.
Correct.
Right? I mean, we saw the move when he didn't sign with Minnesota.
Yep.
The move to Pittsburgh at that point, because it was baked in. Absolutely no movement in any market. Not even juice on their win totals moved with the news. I know people were wringing their hands about, oh my God, it's June 1st and he hasn't signed yet. You remember when Favre left Green Bay, went to the Jets, and then he went to Minnesota? You know when he signed with Minnesota? August 12th. Okay, so.
Didn't he have an injury though?
So.
I don't know if that matters in context.
He did have a bicep injury at the end of the Jets tenure, but I don't know how.
So, I mean, I don't know that all the hand wringing had to be had, but this doesn't do much. I mean, look, they're in a really tough spot in that division. Hopefully, you can beat the Browns twice and then go from there. But I think they're up against it. Cincinnati's going to score 50 points a game. They're going to need to, no, it doesn't. Like Anthony Richardson having a significant injury is more impactful to the betting market than Rodgers, which we already knew going to Pittsburgh. I mean, that's the big news of the day for me.
Yeah, I was amazed by so a lot of people, I thought it was buried yesterday. The original reporting at Indianapolis wasn't the injury. It was that he will return at some point during training camp. That to me says that you have no idea if he's going to be back at some point during training camp. That could be the last week of camp. Who knows?
It could be. He could get no reps at all. So, I mean, when you factor into what I think is a more wide open AFC South than people think.
Yes.
I don't think it's just Houston and move on and figure out where you go from there. I think Indy can be very dangerous. I think Jacksonville may take a big step forward there. I mean, I think Peterson was just going through the motions for a year, and now you're going to have a concentrated effort. So, yeah, that's to me is more significant than anything to do in Pittsburgh.
Real quick, I bet Jacksonville 3-1 to win the AFC South.
Yeah, I think they're alive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the division outside of Tennessee, the division is pretty wide open. Very quietly, you brought this up yesterday. The shoulder was a shoulder or so arm soreness.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, it's shoulder soreness that for CJ Stroud. That why are you having that issue right now too? I think that's something that should be getting more attention as well right now in the division.
Yeah, this time, what has he done?
Exactly.
So that means it was a problem at the end of the year.
Correct. So what do you think as far as the Anthony Richardson, though, just to push that forward a little bit, if this is something that lingers and indefinitely is the word that we're seeing more and more about what his potential return is, do you think that there's value, hypothetically, on Daniel Jones to be the week one starter?
Sure. I mean, I think O'Connell was caught off guard that he left Minnesota.
Yeah.
I really think O'Connell was happy to get McCarthy back and have Daniel Jones that he had some time to work with. And I think that left him completely off guard. And that's why Rodgers became in play there until they got all the health reports they needed on McCarthy. They were never going to give Rodgers number one money, though. That was the problem there, right? Mm-hmm. They were always going to give him backup money. He wants starter money. So that was, I mean, if he had no other landing spot, would he go there? Maybe. But obviously, he's going to be the man in Pittsburgh.
The man, there's so many different ways we can go here. Are you going to, we'll focus on Indy first before we get to, do you buy the long shot that people are throwing out there with Riley Leonard, Tim Murray's favorite quarterback of all time, Riley Leonard on the Colts roster? Could he win rookie of the year or offensive rookie of the year?
Well, he'd have to take some sort of a leap forward from his.
Hey, he won the Manning Passing Academy when he was in high school.
The guy's a running quarterback, okay? I mean, in a league that you can't be a running quarterback, he's okay. I mean, Notre Dame was better when the backup came in the bowl game. And they were. I mean, he went 7-for-7, and then he leaps for greener pastures too. I think the ceiling on Riley Leonard's very low.
I think they're going to be a great preseason team.
Yeah,
get all these scramblers out there. Him, Jason Bean's still there. They're going to be great. I don't know about for the regular season.
You mentioned the Rodgers lair of things for Minnesota, but I think it's pretty clear too, based on what Kevin O'Connell has done here, that there is a big belief in JJ McCarthy and what he can be. Do you agree with that sentiment?
They've put all their eggs in this basket. Yep. I mean, they're all in here and this kid. I think McCarthy is the whole linchpin of the NFC North. I don't know how you can make NFC North future bets until you know how he is, right? It's very strange to me, the dichotomy of the week one line, the Monday night game, Vikings at Bears, which has sat at 1.5 and not moved an inch. Yet all the future money, 8.5, both win totals. Everybody's betting Vikings over and Bears under at circa, right? But that number isn't moving off 1.5. To me, I don't know where the Bears find 9 wins if they don't win the opener and beat the Vikings. Because they're going to lose to them twice then if they lose that game.
I'm kind of surprised in the market's confidence. This seems to me a lot of confidence, not so much in McCarthy as it is O'Connell, right? That he's going to be able to take this kid and be like, nope, we're not going to miss a beat. We're going to be fine. And miss a beat, they were competing for 15 wins in a one seed. But just being a very good team when we don't really know much about him. And I don't know, Mike, like to me, I feel like it's kind of odd. If this kid was going to be this good, like, why are we kind of sniffing around Rodgers? Right? You know, you're in the building.
But see,
you see
I don't think they were. That's what I keep coming back to is I don't think Minnesota was sniffing around Rodgers. I think that's where Rodgers wanted to go. And so that narrative started cycling.
Well, I think they still had questions about his knee, McCarthy's knee, and was he going to be able to go? And of course, what free agent quarterback wouldn't want to go into that situation?
Absolutely.
And walk in there with those weapons and with, I think, as a top, you could argue, some top six. I think he's a top four head coach for sure.
Yeah.
Is there a bet you've made or a bet to be made in the NFL, whether it be season win totals, divisions, anything you really like right now?
So this seems to be counterintuitive, but I bet the Rams to win the NFC and the Super Bowl. I made that bet when they were shopping Stafford, right? Mm-hmm. Because I never believed Stafford was going to leave. But after the schedule came out, I also bet the 49ers over 10.5 wins. I just look at the schedule. Yeah. Like they don't even have to be good
wrapped
to win 12 games.
Yep.
I mean, so then you're going to say, well, the Rams are going to win as a wild card. Well, I've already made that bet before the schedule came out. So
I keep telling her, I mean, we've done this the last couple of days on the show because, you know, her 49ers, you can do over alternate over win total, most wins in the NFC, one seed. Right. That's, you're talking about the schedule for our audience. Like, look at this thing, especially post week 10, when you look at what they're going to go through here, especially if the Colts are actually bottom out and they're awful from week 11 on. I mean, this is a schedule which they can romp through. I wouldn't be shocked if they don't have a loss from week 10 on.
Well, it's very legitimate. They go 7-0 to close this thing out, right? So so now you need four wins before week 10 to get over the win total.
JVT even presented Kyle Shanahan Coach of the Year, 30-1.
How about Brock Purdy MVP? He was the favorite before the Christmas game against Lamar, and then it totally – I can see a scenario where he's in the – at 35-1, I can see a scenario where he's in the mix late.
Yep.
What I was most pleased about with what the 49ers have done is just like getting their contracts out of the way. That this Brock Purdy thing isn't going to linger all the way into training camp. They finish George Kittle. They get Fred Warner. They add Bryce Huff on defense, which I think is a really good addition for them on that side of the ball. Like a lot of things, if they can stay healthy, it, there's no reason for them not to go over that season win total. I love that bet.
You can thank Keena Turner, who your former DB for the 49ers, who's the VP. He's an executive there. He'll be part of Greg Maddux tournament week. They have a bunch of
big baller.
They have a bunch
of
49ers. Yeah. I don't know what the connection was. They have like four ex-49ers
you
playing in the
Greg
tournament.
Maddux, what is that connection? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's they have more 49ers than they have Raiders. They have three current Raiders and four ex-49ers. So
what are the details on that?
So there's seats still available, $3,000 buy-in. You can go to the Circuit Las Vegas website or Baller Dream website. And the tournament's going to be Sunday night. Pay the top three spots, $50,000 to first, $20,000 to second, $5,000 to third. Get to play with all these celebrities. There'll be a layout of food up there, silent auction to help raise money. The charity Baller Dream is for adolescents to young adults who have cancer. So it's kind of, it's a little bit like Make-A-Wish, but specific, and it's not for the younger ones. It's for these kids as they go through high school and into college and age out of a lot of programs that help them out. And what they do is they help with their medical costs, obviously, and emotional support, but also creating dream experiences for them, whether it's to sit courtside at a Lakers game or whatever their thing is that they really want to do.
How's the contest signups going so far?
Well, I mean, we're going to go over 500 for Survivor today. So I think we blow through 15 million.
Yeah.
And then the other one, why even talk about it? Who wants to lock up their money, 100,000 for 4 months? Yeah. We'll worry about that in September.
Week. That's what I was going to ask. Are we going to get all the Grandissimos, like, couple days before?
Why wouldn't you, though? Yep. It's probably going to be a bunch of poker players, too, right?
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we have more news for Circa Sportsbook that we'll get into on the other side of this break, plus your thoughts on the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final.
How about
Final.
Pete DeBoer? I thought you were going to lead with Pete DeBoer.
Game two coming up tonight, and I did tease that earlier, that Pete DeBoer fired from the Dallas Stars earlier this morning.
Served it.
Despite getting to conference final after conference final after conference final was Jake Ottinger, the straw that broke the camel's back. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For the College World Series in Omaha. Money Moves going live from June 12th through the 14th, broadcasting straight from Rocco's, the iconic home of the Jello Shot Challenge. There'll be us, Follow the Money. Jensen Lewis will be there. Mike Palm, who joins us in sets, will be on site in Omaha as well. We're bringing you all the sights, sounds, and best bets from the tournament. If you're around, come stop by and say hello. And I know this has been a big thing for Derek. Mike, the last few years, he loves college baseball, and going out to Omaha, going to Rocco's is big for him.
Well, he's the mayor of Omaha. He goes out there and brings 30 people and, you know, saves the economy. Anyhow, he said something when I first met him. So it's like 10, 12 years ago. He said, Super Regional weekend will be bigger than the first weekend of March Madness at some point. And like, he's going to, you know, spend the rest of his life trying to prove how wrong he wasn't with this thing. But it is picked up. Our handle. You know what I see in from a betting perspective? Guys that bet MLB mixing college baseball in their parlays and stuff. Much more so than ever. You know, there were just guys that would focus on college baseball and the casual bettor really didn't. Now you see it. And it's on TV more. And we book more than Friday nights during the year. We book, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is not easy to do because you don't know a lot about some of these pitchers that pitch on Sunday. So it'll be my first time going to Omaha during the College World Series. I've been there many times, obviously, but I never have gone during the College World Series.
Samesies here. I'm very much looking forward to it. And I think Stormy's going to pay for everything when we're up there, too. So that'll be good.
Well, I'm hoping that if Derek's running the show, he's going to help us out.
Well, Bill will be there, right?
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Well, Mitch and Paul. So we
Bill was with us on the trip to Chicago, right? Yeah. So we're going around. I said, Bill, I think it'd be easier if you just tell us the buildings you didn't live in.
Yeah.
Right?
Point them out as you're walking
there,
around.
I've been there 2 blocks that
it's
way.
Very fair. Before we get to game two tonight in the Stanley Cup final, you mentioned it at the end of the block, Pete DeBoer getting fired from the Dallas Stars.
Inevitable. I think 100% the right move to pull Ottinger in game five. As we call him, the fake ace. We saved our money. Didn't bet on Dallas this year. We've burned a lot of money betting on every year we've got the Stars to win it. Didn't do it this year. But when he comes out after the game and he is so direct about he's lost 6 of his last 7 to the Oilers and he gives up 2 goals, I can't play it, right? How could this tandem of head coach and goalie continue forward with this team when you know you're going to be running into Edmonton again and again over the next few years? One of them had to go. Much easier to get rid of DeBoer. I would have shipped Ottinger. I just don't believe in this guy. Like, as much as we say Hellebuck doesn't win in the playoffs, Ottinger doesn't win in the conference finals, right? They get him there, which is nice. And for a casual fan base, maybe, you say in a city that doesn't really put all their attention on the Stars, it's nice that they go deep every year. But you need to take the next step. I mean, Dallas keeps having all these goalies that are going to be the best. What happened to Ben Bishop?
Yeah.
Ben Bishop was going to be the greatest of all time. Howie Bloom was there. They were all, but it just didn't pan out. So this was inevitable.
That's why I brought it up to Stormy when the conference finals were still going on. You know, everybody, and rightfully so, was crapping on Carolina. But I felt like the narrative should be strong for Dallas, too, the fact that they have gotten to this point and continue to fail to break through.
It was a greater mismatch in the West than there was in the East in the conference finals this year, I felt.
Okay.
I did. I mean, they were light years away from being able to beat the Oilers. They just couldn't. They were never going to score enough on them. And you know that Edmonton's going to get 2 goals and then it's going to be all over. Carolina Elite had a fighting chance against Florida, right? And even led 2-0 in game five there. And I think finally that got the Panthers' attention.
3 straight conference finals for the Dallas Stars, nothing to show for it. Pete DeBoer-led teams have been to the 3rd round of the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years, and he's now been fired a 3rd time from a job. Like, it's just, his teams are very good, and they get there, but they don't get to the cup final or win it, and
that he can only get to game 7. Because he never loses a game 7. He just has to get to game 7.
I brought that up to her. I was like, my man's undefeated in game 7, and yet he's going around like a pair of socks. Like, he can't stay anywhere.
It's crazy. Okay, let's go to tonight. Obviously, game 1, the Oilers get that win, 4-3 in overtime. They rally from down 3-1. They looked like the better team, especially late in this game, specifically. I think there were moments where Florida was, like, 65% of the game. I thought Florida was going to win the game. And then the way that they played in the 3rd period really shifted things in my brain. How did you see it? And what do you think about tonight?
I thought a bad second goal by Bobrovsky. Remember when it was 3-1 and he let that shot from near the blue line to get in between his arm? Maybe he didn't see it. But that got Edmonton back in the game because the momentum was all Florida. Florida hadn't lost a game in the playoffs where they led after 1 or 2, right? So it's a monumental task they did.
I think that goal and the Ekholm goal probably he wishes he had back.
I bet Edmonton, not because I thought they were the better team. I think they're very close. I give an advantage to Florida. I think they're a little bit better. But the narrative in the Stanley Cup playoffs is the great players always get a cup, right? Who's the best player in hockey all time that never won a cup? I mean, when you look at the Marcel Dion, Pavel Bure, I mean, it's not superstars of superstars, right? All the big ones get their cup. And I just thought it's McDavid and Dreisaitl's time. Also, remember, in the finals last year, Dreisaitl was hurt. Didn't have 1 goal. You have a healthy Dreisaitl this time.
We talked about that earlier when we were going through the Conn Smythe numbers, that he had 3 points that series, no goals. He's got 2 the first game, including the game winner. The postseason overtime goals he's had this year have been awesome.
People were asking me about Skinner. You think Skinner can still win it? I said, I don't think so, because you have to remember that Pickard came in and won 4 games out of the 16, and they were when they were down, right? So I think that I said, you know, you could still find Dreisaitl at 9-1 before before game one, that was a better shot if you wanted to take a chance at beating McDavid for Conn Smythe.
Did game one affect the way you think the series is going to play on the long term, like lengthwise?
No, I think it's going to be 6 or 7, right? Yeah. I'd be shocked that one team gets control of this series. I think all the games are going to be good. This is exactly what you want.
Yeah. I was telling her, like my hockey eye is nowhere near as trained as both of yours, but like, I was amazed how lackadaisical Florida looked near the end of that game. The mistakes, the offside, the penalty that led to the power play in which they lost on. There's so many things where I was like, what is this team doing? It doesn't look like the Florida team that got there.
Yeah, the overtime. I mean, all it was, how many icings did they have in the overtime?
Like, careful, Mike. I got yelled at by hockey fans because I was complaining about too many icings. You're not allowed to do that.
But I'm texting everybody. I'm like, I mean, they've had 12 icings in 3 minutes here. I mean, they can't get control. Every time they got it, they just threw it down the ice.
Yeah. They were just, it looked like they were so desperate. Yeah, like, right. We just have to get this
every
out of here.
Every time they touched the puck, they just threw it. And not high in the air, just send it down and take the icing.
Yep. I was amazed. I think there was 10 called in that overtime period. That was nuts.
That's what I was just saying. The people that say things to you on social media, I feel like are just stupid sometimes, because we were all thinking it in that moment.
That's the meanest thing you've ever said.
No, I'm JVT gets upset that I say,
I feel like she's got to be stronger. Call people stupid sometimes.
I don't think it's polite. So I'm trying to be more stern. We'll see what I can do. But as far as tonight goes, you think we get goals again?
I do. I think there'll be goals in this series. There's been goals in this whole play. This is the highest scoring playoff since 93. I don't see a bunch of 2-1 games here. I mean, 3-3, that game had a shot, but I would just keep playing overs too if you're a totals player.
Thoughts on the NBA Finals after last night?
Well, I mean, I guess you say buy low at 360 on OKC. Well, you're going to see everybody in the World Cup. We had several players lose six figures on the money line last night. You're going to see 10 times the money line bets in the zigzag theory, right? And they go from a 9.5 to an 11.
That's amazing.
Right? I mean, it's pretty tough. Indiana's, the shots they're making in the last 3 minutes are all guarded with a hand in the face. And it's not like, where's this great OKC defense? They didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he's SGA, that's his shot. You hit that little shot and you win the game. But it's good for us in that it makes interest to the series, right? Sure. And it extends the series.
I mean, I think there's a couple of things. But first off, with Indiana, every statistic, as I tell her, like we've been talking about since 1971, since this, since that, I would venture a guess that do you guys offer the double result, like game and series?
No, we don't.
Because the books that do, I would assume there's going to be a lot of Thunder game two, Thunder win the series. No. Like that's because then you really eat into it. That was what, minus 270 for game one. And I'm assuming that's going to be a very popular play going into Sunday.
Yeah, they're you're right, because the series price comes down. So you're going to get the better price on that, even though the game price goes up.
Yes, exactly. That's going to be a very popular play.
Do you think you get play on the public laying the 11 on OKC in the bounce back spot game too?
People really don't play this point spreads in these games, Stormy. Not a lot. In game, they'll play point spreads. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people playing at this number, at 9, 10, and 11.
I would assume you're doing a lot of player prop action, right?
Well, more than the sides and totals.
Yep.
But the NBA's become that way. Mm-hmm. Hockey's an anomaly to superstars. If you have a superstar, you'll get a lot of prop action on it. But the NBA, more people bet players than they bet teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I do that, especially in a lot of these spreads. They're hard to play.
Well, I think it's a sport, like, again, not being familiar with the intricacies of hockey. It is a sport that is very much driven by lineup changes and player roles. So, like, if you're ahead of things like that, mm-hmm. like I was big on playing Hartenstein's unders, I nailed that his role would be lesser. He only played like 16 minutes. He also had 17 points. Like, he also had 17 points of rebounds in those 17 minutes. But I think that's also why it's both the star magnitude, but it's also like you can really make your hay if you're understanding how these teams are going to operate.
I saw a funny tweet last night. It said if the Pacers win this series, the Knicks are going to fire Mark Daigneault.
That's awesome. They're interviewing Jason Kidd, or they want Jason Kidd. How about that? I love this.
I thought Malone was going to be the guy. I thought they were firing him because they had already talked to Malone. Why would you fire him and not have a succession plan?
It's the Knicks.
That was exactly what I said yesterday, though, right? I was like, you only make this move if you have your guy.
That's what I said. They must have talked to Malone already.
Maybe it was the arrogance that they knew that they were going to, they think they can just convince the Mavericks to let them talk to Kidd and grab him.
Ugh. You excited about the Kentucky Sportsbook?
I am. It looks great. They're going to open the expansion June 30th, and then the new book will open, I believe, July 21st. We're going back down the 19th and 20th of August, Derek and I, for the grand open.
Amazing. We got to hit the break. Appreciate Mike Palm, as always. We'll see you again next week in Omaha, however. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Horse racing fans, get ready. VSiN at the track. Come coming up live today with everything you need to bet the Belmont Stakes. Join our horse racing experts, Mike Somich, who nailed the superfecta at the Kentucky Derby earlier this horse racing season, as well as our guy Patrick Maher, as they break down the field, deliver expert analysis, and share their top picks. Don't miss it. VSiN at the Track, streaming live today, 2:10 p.m. Eastern on the VSiN YouTube channel at VSiN Live. Give it a look. By the way, we had a breakdown of the Belmont earlier today with Jeremy Plonk, First Bet lead horse racing analyst there as well. If you missed any of the show, you want to get that breakdown, make sure you download and subscribe to Money Moves in podcast form. We get those out each hour after the show right away. We also talked to Nate Kreckman a little bit earlier on in the program. Of course, the last half hour with Mike Palm. So if you ever miss the show, remember you can get Money Moves in podcast form as well. Let's give some final thoughts here on the Stanley Cup Final Game 2 coming up tonight, as well as your instant early reactions for game two in the NBA finals. And as far as tonight goes, my lean is Edmonton to go up 2-0 in the series, handle business at home, even though the market's moved against them a little bit here. I do like the over as well. Would rather have a six. And there was one rogue six out there I saw last time I was checking around the odds boards. Juice -125 to the under on the 6.5 at most places as well. So it could get there. I just don't think that it will ultimately in most spots, but I feel like we're going to get goals in this series pretty consistently. And I made the reference earlier, JVT, I can see this playing out, maybe not for the whole series, but at least early on these first 3-4 games, playing very similar to what we saw with Florida and Toronto a couple series ago, where the home team handles business in a couple high scoring back and forth close games. And then same thing when you get to game 3 and 4, where Florida kind of do their business more so on home ice.
Florida goes back home in a tied series 1-1. Come on now.
I can see it. Like, it's, I'm not.
No, no. I'm strong on this.
Firm.
Yep. Florida is going to win this series. Florida will win tonight. Florida will take care of the Edmonton Oilers back at home. They'll be up 3-1 by the time we go back to Edmonton.
I think a lot of people think the way that you do in this one. I am just more on Edmonton's side with it.
In all seriousness, I feel like what we saw from them was fixable in game one.
Sure, I agree with that.
And so if they're going to do that, and as we have talked about, Bobrovsky does have his moments where you're like, what are you doing, man? If you clean those up, then you're in a, like, look, they were still up 3-1, and then we obviously know they fall apart from there. So I think there is a reality in which they win this game tonight, and it's a tied series going back home for the Panthers.
Listen.
But I'll say really sorry, but really quickly, in terms of actually betting it, you could have gotten like +115-ish mm-hmm. on this thing
-108
days ago.
Now.
Yeah, right. Like, so I'll pass on trying to get into it now, but I do think I agree with what the market's doing here. I believe the Panthers probably should have won game one. They ultimately don't, and I think they're at a good spot to bounce back as long as they get their heads out of their rear ends here for game two.
I think they should have a little bit more fire. The third period, we talked about it a little bit with Mike Palm, but being outshot 14-2, had just 6 shot attempts. Mm-hmm. Very uncharacteristic for that group. So I think they play a better, more complete game coming up in this one. But I've said this from the very beginning. I think we're going to get a long series. That makes too much sense. Both of these teams are very equally matched. Florida probably gets the edge top to bottom, but Edmonton's also got this kind of intangible magic to them. And a lot of what Mike Palm was saying, too, that the best player in the world, you expect him to get a cup at some point. This year, things just continued to show up Edmonton every time you bet against them. Not quite, though, to the level of the Indiana Pacers, mm-hmm. which is where we will go next year. Of course, they get the 110. I keep saying 110 first. The 111-110 win yesterday, game one in OKC. Stunning. Anyone that threw the Thunder in a money line parlay play, anything like that, OKC was a 10.5 point favorite in this thing. They're an even bigger favorite in game two in the bounce back role. There's no way they should have lost that game. They're up 15 in the fourth quarter. If you tell me a team turns the ball over 25 times in the other seven,
I mean,
I'm never saying that that's the team that won the game. So I mean, you have to give your props to the Indiana Pacers for what they did in clutch time to win that game. For Tyrese Halliburton, with 0.3 seconds to hit that shot. But OKC led the entire way, and I still believe they're the better team in the series. That's why they're still more than a $3 favorite to go on and win the series, no matter what everybody else wants to say.
There you go. Strong.
Are you proud of me?
Yes.
I'm trying.
Strong. I mean, in the break, you called them all a bunch of dumb hicks out there in Indiana.
Whoa,
but,
whoa.
I, like,
okay.
You know, that's fine.
This didn't happen. You're going to get me in trouble.
All right. So here's the thing. and to your point too, if I were to just like tell you box score wise that Indiana was going to turn the ball over, to your point, 24 times, Lou Dort was going to hit 5 3-pointers, get 4 steals and 2 blocks, you're going to be like, oh yeah, like this team's going to kill them. And that ultimately wasn't the case. The question of Indiana covering or the Thunder covering in game two, I think it's Indiana or nothing. You can't get me to buy in on Thunder minus 11.5 here or 11 in game two. We've talked about this a lot. I understand the zigzag and how strong it's been throughout this postseason. I cannot willingly lay more points just because the Thunder lost. Now, there are a lot of indicators that would tell you at the very least the Thunder should win this game. You have brought all of them up. They also held Indy to 109.9 points per 100 possessions. Offensive rating that floats around the 41st percentile just was not good. Turned them over on about a quarter of their possessions overall. Again, not good. They should be able to do that. They should be able to win and even the series. However, I'm not saying anything crazy for the team that is a, what is it, -420 on the money line for game two. So I think they even it up. I think what's really going to be interesting is, again, we hit on this with Mike Palm a little bit, is the roles for some of these players and what's going to happen. For example, I thought Mark Daigneault kind of got outcoached. And we had talked about this, despite the belief of some, one of the edges that Indiana had, right, was Rick Carlisle. He deserved to have the edge. He's been there and done that. He's done some brilliant stuff here throughout his career and in this postseason. Daigneault, I thought, got, if you can say, a little cute, whatever it was. For example, he goes with a small ball lineup to end the game, and they get killed on the glass in the end of the fourth quarter. Why not play Holmgren? Holmgren, I know, I understand, did not have a good game by any stretch. He was absolutely terrible, actually. You talk about just 6.6 rebounds, 2 of 9 shooting, couldn't finish anything within 4 feet of the basket, but he only played 24 minutes. Like, you got to play Holmgren a little bit more there, especially if you're going to go with the solo big stuff, which they started to do. So I wonder if we see more from Holmgren, if it's worth betting some Holmgren over here and expecting that he is going to play more than 30 minutes, and if you're going to steer away from the small ball lineup that you tried to put on the floor. The other part that I didn't like what Daigneault did, Stormy, why did Aaron Wiggins in a finals game play 9 minutes? Why did A.J. Mitchell play 4 minutes? These guys should not be seeing the floor. Yeah. This is an NBA Finals game. There's no need to get that cute and try to put these small ball units out there. I think you see the rotation tighten up a little bit. I think we see more from Holmgren. You could probably go back to the well with him, like double-double, whatever it was. I know Mitch had a unique one where I think it was Chet double-double and Thunder to win the game. Go and check on that. But I think that maybe that's how you kind of get cute to attack some of this. I can't, in good faith, say I'm going to lay 11.5 with the Thunder. Do think they bounce back. I'm going to be more interested in some of these player props and some of their roles here.
Yeah, Holmgren, interesting way. I know we talked about NBA Finals MVP a little bit earlier. You did say that if the Pacers were to go the distance here and potentially win and continue to upset the apple cart, Pascal Siakam at the price available would be a worthwhile wager potentially. For me on the NHL side, I do think a slight hedge that I am ultimately going to fire on before the game today is Sam Bennett at 20-1
The
Conn Smythe market. We know this, it's been well documented. I think Edmonton's going to win the series. That is what I am rooting for, and that's what I put my money on. But at 20-1 for Sam Bennett, I think he has the edge over Sergei Bobrovsky so far with what he's been able to do from a goal scoring standpoint and driving offense. And if we believe Edmonton's going to continue to score goals, even with Sergei Bobrovsky being good in net, why not take that approach? So I'm going to add that to the account.
Find,
I know I didn't put it in the rundown today, but
if you can find somewhere that actually puts adjusted Conn Smythe odds up. One of the things that drives me nuts about this time of year is that a lot of books will not hang up adjusted finals MVP odds.
It's messed up. Hey, everybody, reminder, introducing the $500 trifecta, VSIN, GBank, and First Bet all teaming up for this one. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card. Your first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll get a $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature card. First Bet's going to give you a $100 deposit match, and then VSIN completes the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription through October 31st, a $200 value. Again, that's a $500 our trifecta from our friends at GBank, First Bank, and us here at VSIN. Head over to VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account in response to the offer. Will not apply to request to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Anything else you want to get out there before we hit the weekend?
Not really. I just sit here in silence. Just get ready.
We love silence.
Just get ready for the weekend. No, I'm very excited. I will say, very excited for game two. Very excited that the series looks like it's going to be very good.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. And congratulations to all of those who apparently had all these Pacers Moneyline tickets yesterday.
Yeah, they're really coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, saw it coming from a mile away.
Fascinating. I will say, though, our wonderful producer, Brian Ortega, his father has a Pacers NBA title bet slip that is a pretty hefty one that he has not hedged, did not hedge, and
tear it up now. It's over.
Fell asleep or almost fell asleep last night because he thought the game was over. So what a hell of a story. I love it.
Tear it up. It's over.
That's a wrap for us today. Keep it locked right here. Prop Points coming up next. And we will see you next week, Monday, same time, same place. Good luck with your bets this weekend.